Well, it's Tuesday, April 16th, and it's time for Campus Connection. There are school district officials here in the studio with me to talk about what's going to be happening at the school board meeting tonight. In the studio, I have Superintendent Erica Kluepainter and School Board President Mara Litomski. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi, Angela.
So, tonight is a regular board meeting, and it's at the middle and high school library at 6 p.m., and one of the things on the agenda is a revision of the current year's budget, which is, I think, a normal thing. The finance department does a revision every fall and spring, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do a revision, and we did include that with the board packet, and I think you shared it as well. I linked to that on the KFSK little article that you did on the board meeting, which is awesome. Just gets it out there one more way. And not a lot of change, so which is always nice, and maintaining really close to our 10%. Fund balance moving forward, which is exciting as well. And
that 10% is kind of the limit. Like, you want to have it, that's the maximum amount that you can have, mm-hmm. and you like mm-hmm. to stay there as a safety.
As close as possible as we can and carry that forward. And that is true. Mara was just mentioning that too. So, and Mara's going to give a little bit more of a recent update on her visit to the legislature last week, and we had ours a couple weeks ago, and so we'll talk a little bit more about that. But the $20 million, the one-time funding that's been back and forth discussed, you know, within
that
this
the
year's
governor
budget.
Wanted to claw back mm-hmm. from an already approved and in process budget, mm-hmm. just so that everyone understands that we are already in the middle of the funding cycle. And it would have been a clawback of what they had already promised mm-hmm. us, the $20 million.
So mm-hmm. we're talking about like two separate proposed cuts. There's the coming next fiscal year budget cuts that the governor wants. And then but we're talking that $20 million is from what was already allocated by the legislature and the lawmakers mm-hmm. last year.
In this year's budget, current budget.
Yeah, that's
yes.
happening now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's almost the end of school.
It is. And, you know, it's interesting because actually Mara just mentioned that in we last week, we still have not actually received that money from the state, even though they have really theoretically and
both houses have kind of rejected picking up that supplemental that would have drawn that money back from school districts. But technically, the department and the administration has until June 30th to hand out those funds. So it's really unfortunate, the games that are being played, mm-hmm. because those monies were passed with the previous legislature. They should have already gone out.
In January.
Yeah, in January. And they're still just sitting on them. And for our small district, it's a fair percentage, but some of the bigger districts, they're even, you know, having a loss in even larger funding than us. So,
would that be covered by a 10% savings account? Or that your budget reserve?
We're okay in the sense that we kind of held it as a placeholder right now in our capital line item because it's been volleyed around so much. So we've accounted for it in there. We haven't spent it per se. So I think that was a good move on our part because it's been so up and down. And I think it will come. I mean, I do think it will come, but it's just, as Mara says, just kind of par for the course right now, I think, with sort of it feels like a game, and it's not a game, you know. So, I mean, there's even been discussion about individual districts. Every district, there was a conversation between ALAZBO, the business officials, and I think AASB, the school board, and the administrative group, that we should actually, and may all still, send invoices individually from each district to the department for the money.
Mm-hmm. I mean, some districts hired teachers that they needed that year based upon those funds.
Right.
So, I mean, every district has a little bit of a different scenario. We, mm-hmm. of course, have always been conservative. We've always had the 10% in reserves. So we have not dropped into our reserves, but there's other districts that you know need that money to pay their bills now, and it's unfortunate that the department is still holding on to it.
Yeah.
So as you mentioned earlier, Mara, you were in a legislative fly-in along with Vice the vice president of the board, Sarah Holmgren, also attend?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. She was there with me.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there were other school board members from all over the state in mm-hmm. Juneau trying to talk to lawmakers, right?
Yep. We were all up there the first weekend in April. We are a part of the Alaska Association of School Boards, and they plan two different fly-in opportunities for school boards to come in and kind of hit the hill together so that we're not just up there individually, but we kind of all go at the same time, and then they hold larger committee meetings as well to get some of the legislators together to hear us all at once, which they had an opportunity to do. We spoke in front of the House Education Committee one morning where we were able to give presentations. Unfortunately, we were cut off before Petersburg got to go.
We were prepared, though.
They shut down the meeting. They shut down the meeting. They weren't timing it very well. Some of the districts that went early got to have quite a bit of time, and then they sort of ran out towards the end. So we passed on our presentation to the committee via paper. Yeah. And I spoke to Representative Andy Story, who sits on that committee from Juneau. Mm-hmm. So
I would think there's probably a lot of testimony from all over the state regarding the proposed education cuts from school board members. I could see where there would be a lot of people wanting to talk.
Mm-hmm. Yep. The unfortunate part is that even though we are, in most districts, volunteers, you know, not employees of the school district, and generally we have kids in the public school systems ourselves, we're still viewed as a special interest or part of the system when we are up there. So there's still resistance, even though we are a constituent, even though we are a community member, and our views are based upon those things, we're still viewed as part of the system. So there is some resistance when we're sitting in front of people who have a different viewpoint that we're not necessarily listened to as just having valid points. You know, we're part of this evil public school system or whatever they want to paint it as, which is too bad. But I mean, that's why we kind of try to get other voices to speak up, you know, business owners or community members or
mm-hmm. anyone. So you got a sense that some people are supporting those cuts.
There is a strong group of legislators that believe that reduced cuts are necessary in order for the state to survive. And that is just a viewpoint. It's a ideological viewpoint that they see that government spending is too large, instead of seeing our revenues at this point are just too low to cover the essential government expenses that we have.
And they're not separating out education from...
I would say that their education will still get some support, but if the tides were turned and more... Right now, I think that the majority of the legislators that are up there are supportive of education and not looking to gouge out parts of the education budget. But if the tide were turned and there were just a few more people who were on the sides of cuts, I would say that it could easily have turned the other direction as well. So we're thankful who we have in place right now, and might be something that comes up in the 2020 election cycle, unfortunately, but yeah.
And I can't think of her name, actually, Ardwin. Czar comes to my mind, you know, the budget czar, because she's been, people have thrown that out as a title, you know. Mm-hmm. This is the governor's budget person that he brought up from the lower 48. 6 months ago or something mm-hmm. like that mm-hmm. to do the whole state operating budget, and she's been kind of part of his presentations. Mm-hmm. And did you hear from her like you were supposed to?
Yep, she spoke to us and she gave a presentation about the budget situation, and we were told that she would be accepting questions, and our association said that they told her that we would be giving questions and expecting, you know, some sort of answer. And I rose to speak about the statewide teacher shortage that's going on, and how they feel that it's one of their priorities that they're saying that they're making a priority, retaining and recruiting effective teachers. And I asked how, you know, the budget cuts will help that. How will it help us recruit and retain effective teachers throughout the state. It's not a big problem in Petersburg by any means. We have great teachers, and we have great teachers that want to stay here in our district, but statewide, it's a large mm-hmm. problem. Turnover, especially in some of the really rural locations, you know, they have teacher turnover, principal turnover, and that affects student outcomes when they don't have that connection to a teacher. So I rose to speak about Ira. You know, I asked that question to her, and she said, "Oh, I didn't come here to answer questions. I came here to listen to your suggestions." So at this point, once you have already dropped your budget without any policy behind it, it's disingenuous to come and ask then the stakeholders for suggestions. Is my feeling. They say that they were blindsided by the price of oil. Well, that was in January. You had months before you actually dropped the budget in February to ask those questions, to come to the stakeholders and say, "Hey, oh, we're surprised by the price of oil. What can mm-hmm. we do? How can we work with you guys?" Versus, "We're surprised by the price of oil. Here's our cuts. Now, what are your suggestions?"
Right. So, without a plan.
It's unfortunate that there was no vision.
Did you happen to hear any more dialogue along the lines? I've heard one kind of argument definitely from the governor's office, which is, you know, well, more money hasn't proven to help education in the state. So mm-hmm. let's say there's a teacher shortage or whatever the case may be, you know, state testing or state, there's no proof that money helps education in Alaska mm-hmm. is kind of what the governor has his message.
Yeah, and I would reverse that. There's no proof that cutting is going to create these better outcomes that they're looking for. And I think in the short term, it will definitely even lower those outcomes because many school districts will have to consider shuttering some schools, growing their classroom sizes, going down to one teacher that teaches mm-hmm. first grade to you know, a senior in high school. You know, those things will be affected by a cut to education. So yes, maybe what they say throwing money at the problem isn't going to help, but neither is cutting. And if they want real solutions, then they could ask for those. They could ask
right.
stakeholders how they can achieve those things.
Exactly. And it's a singular issue because they're not focusing on the complexity of education, which it is not just about a test score. And the situation, the issues that our students face and the issues that we're asking our educators to address to help our children continue to grow and thrive are extremely challenging, and they're very complex. And so to talk about reducing when the services that are needed in a lot of areas and for a lot of students, you know, based on trauma and informed instruction, and you know, things that are well beyond reading, writing, and math.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way it is. It's our life. It's what we face every day in our classrooms. And so, you know, as you say, it's disingenuous to just think that you can just be so simplistic about what a response is or an answer to that. It's not that simple. And the children we serve are not that simple. And our families are dealing with a lot of different situations. And it's just not that simple. It's very complex. And so, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, reducing is not going to somehow make that better. It's not going to provide the support that we need for our kids.
Well, now it's the budget is with the Senate, right? The House passed mm-hmm. its version last week,
mm-hmm.
which didn't have such severe cuts as the governor in
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense about the Senate versus the House and where lawmakers are there with education, Mara?
The Senate, I feel like, has been much more tight-lipped. So if mm-hmm. you've been following along, the House had a pretty open process in their subcommittees. You know, they didn't start with the governor's budget as a base, although historically they haven't ever started with the governor's budget as a base. But they did take up, or have at least offer the opportunity to take up, each one of the governor's suggested cuts. We haven't seen that process in the Senate subfinance committees or in their regular subcommittees. So I think that I don't know that I have a sense really of where the Senate is sitting with what's going on, because we're not seeing it play out in their subcommittees like we did in the House.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, sounds like they might have weeks to be going over the budget, the Senate, before they.
Well, if you look at their meeting schedule this week, so they're looking at closing down by Thursday at noon for the Easter weekend. But there are several Senate committees that are having budget close out this week. So while you haven't seen any action towards what they might be doing or any conversation happening at the committee level, they will be submitting and closing out without those conversations. So my guess is that the Finance Committee has been meeting, you know, outside of their public meetings and crafting their version of the budget that they will come forward with, which isn't unusual. Oftentimes it is the chairs that just create their version of the budget and then open it up for amendments at that point. So it's not too unusual. The way that the House went through the process this year was a little bit more open than we have seen in previous years, but
so I guess we'll just have to wait and see what happens with the Senate. And then, of course, after all of that is the governor having his second go and whether he wants to try to veto line items in the budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which we're not sure exactly. So there's differing legal opinions right now as to what education funding looks like in the budget. The governor, with his appointed attorney general, has come out with a legal opinion saying that because there was no money allocated in this year's budget, that the forward funding from last session is up for veto.
Mm-hmm.
And the legislative's finance or the legislative's attorneys have given a legal opinion that that is not the case, and that the funding from last year is fine and is set. So,
yeah. So we're not sure his power might be with education funding.
And, you know, whether he takes his own legal opinion and then goes towards some sort of court, where it ends up that we're in a court case,
mm-hmm.
Is, you know, entirely possible, but then would be unfortunate for a state who says that they don't have any money to be spending extra, would be spending money on a court case that really shouldn't come to fruition at all.
Yeah.
You know, it was signed into law by a previous legislature, and we should be moving forward on it and not continually sitting here in these seats again, you know, arguing about funding education for students that will better our state in the long run.
Yeah.
So.
Well, certainly, I mean, just Campus Connection here on KFSK, and then the school board meetings, it's been quite the topic for quite a while, because so there is so much unknown and so much uncertainty on
and
how much the district will have.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that's tied to what the future looks like.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And people's jobs and lives and, you know, holding on to contracts and wanting to make sure that we're making the best financial decisions and being responsible with our budget and making, you know, making good decisions and following plans that have been laid out and discussed. And, you know, we've done our work on the front end. And so it continues to be frustrating when, you know, when these things kind of come out of left field and it takes us away from our mission, which is really tiresome. It's trickles down to kids, especially older kids are very well aware of things that are going on. They have a lot of questions and concerns. They voice a lot of those, within the school setting and within their own groups, and they certainly have a very vested interest in what's going on and care deeply about it. And so, you know, that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate to have that stress kind of trickling down through teachers, through our aides, everybody that works for us, you know, and families. Just it's that unbalanced, you know, feeling, and it's unnecessary. I think that's the part that we're sort of tired of. But anyway, so we did make a decision, we have made the decision, you know, to sort of move forward in our typical conservative fashion as far as lifting the pause button, as I guess what I'm calling it, moving forward with a fourth grade position that we had talked about in January and had planned for. We're moving forward with putting that out there. We're moving forward with replacing the vacant special education position. And those are all things that we had, you know, had in our plan, and we're moving forward. It's time to move forward. We're not going to be held hostage anymore, I guess, by things that are going on up there. So we're moving forward with that. And we are looking at a different configuration in our library positions in the elementary and the high school.
I was just going to ask about that because Mary Ellen Anderson mm-hmm. announced her retirement mm-hmm. after almost 20 years
yeah.
as the librarian. So yeah.
So that's one of the positions that we are looking at some different configurations, whether it's within looking at Mrs. Cotta, who's the middle school and high school certified media specialist and librarian, looking at some ways that we might be able to oversee and work within both libraries with some classified support as well. So it will look different, but we think that it can be as impactful and supportive as we want it to be. And so we have some great opportunities for some planning right now while Ms. Anderson is still here and is still in the position and is still, you know, able to help provide some feedback on that and do some really good forward planning. And I think we have some, it might look different and change is always, you know, difficult, but I think we've got some good opportunities to make things work the best that they can for the kids and for the programs themselves. And we're fortunate because we've had, I mean, Ms. Cotta has been here for a long time as well and is very experienced and has some great staff in her library as well and is excited about some new opportunities in the district.
So that would save the district a little money.
Mm-hmm, it would. And so, you know, again, as we do, we always, you know, we take information and we try to do our best within that to provide the least impact to the classroom itself while still maintaining those support services around our kids. So whether it is in the library or our counselors, you know, that sort of thing. So at this point, I think that's probably where we'll move forward. And it's conservative. And then, of course, it's always easier to add things back, right, down the road as those things go. But that's an area where you could do that a little easier than trying to, like, add a classroom in August or something like that. So that's the planning that we've had in the district here in the last couple of weeks.
So the special education position that you're referring to, is that Mrs. Kahn's position as she's
yes.
taking over as mm-hmm. principal next school year?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that would be her replacement in special
yes.
ed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the fourth grade position?
And that is a classroom. So over the last 5 years, we've basically been on a hiring freeze or reduction. And that's a class that we've talked about wanting to add back into our system based on student numbers as they've moved up through mm-hmm. multi-age classes. And then as a class moves on to the middle school next year, you know, you always have some classes come in that are more and some are less. And mm-hmm. anyway, so that was something that was in our planning actually from last fall. And we started the process of posting even internally in January, and then we kind of hit the pause button on it because things were starting to unravel.
The budget was dropped.
And yeah, and again, yeah. we had already, our ducks have been in a row all year. It's not new. And so that's what was frustrating, I guess, to us, is we had very clearly started that conversation even last year. And so moving forward, we had a really clear plan for that. And so we're back on our plan.
So this is an additional teacher
mm-hmm,
at the grade school.
Mm-hmm, yep.
So the fifth grade class that is moving up to the middle school next year and the current fourth grade class have been a split class throughout their years in elementary school because they both kind of have that
right
mid-range size.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we were looking at it with those fifth graders moving up to the sixth grade, the kids moving up to the fifth grade really couldn't split down with the third graders who are moving up to the fourth grade
mm-hmm.
Without those classrooms getting really crowded. And so we're doing what's best for our kids, and that is breaking it out into another small classroom size. We know that small classroom size definitely affects school outcomes,
mm-hmm.
and the smaller the class size, the better connection that they have with their teacher and, you know, better outcomes for students. So
yeah.
That's why we're going forward and
Yep.
Hiring.
And that was part of the plan, you know, like I say, all the way through. And so it's good to just be moving forward with the things that we had already determined we needed, you know. Mm. So it's, that feels good. So there's still some uncertainty. And like I said, there's still some details and some planning to be done on our library media program. But we will not leave that unsupported. So just reassuring people about that. We value it very, very highly. And so we want to, we're going to maintain the integrity of that, those programs within our system. So.
Okay. Well, anything else that we should touch on about tonight's meeting?
We're going to offer our non-tenured contracts tonight as well, which is another thing we need to move forward with. And we're excited about that.
That's like half a dozen teachers, mm-hmm. right?
Yep, yep. And, yeah, I don't think there's much else, I guess.
All right, well, that meeting, that regular meeting of the school board, starts at 6 o'clock tonight in the middle and high school library. It's open to the public as usual. But if you can't make it there and you want to stay informed, you can always listen to KFSK because we'll be airing it live. And then later on, we'll be posting the audio to our website, too.
Yeah. Yes, and we appreciate that so much, the coverage that you do for our schools and getting the word out there about what is going on in our schools and keeping people informed mm-hmm. by you guys coming out during those meetings and sitting there with us. So,
all right, well, thank you so much.
You bet.
And we'll see you tonight.
Sounds good.